Welcome back on with John McMurtry, kind of going around the globe at home and abroad. John, let me raise one topic that I have a written article I've had for a number of days, but I have not yet gotten it out. I thought I would get it out this weekend. I didn't do it because stuff comes up that really is very time sensitive, and I need to get something out the next day rather than delay. I'm talking about the debate going on in Congress about the fiscal cliff. Well, there's nothing, we talked about it a little bit on the program yesterday. Well, actually more than a little bit. There's nothing mysterious about the so-called fiscal cliff. And we made the point yesterday, John.
2% tax on the very rich.
Cliff. That and a lot of other simple things would solve the problem in a heartbeat. But of course they won't do that. And what's going on is simply what I call duplicitous doublespeak, or doublespeak duplicity, to literally a claim there's a problem that could easily be solved another way. In other words, the national debt or the annual deficits, they're real. They're not out of control. I mean, they're still manageable, but they're real, and they could easily be addressed by sound policies. But all the things that work well and would really straighten out the problem are avoided. And the name of the game, the fiscal cliff translated, means whack it out of the ordinary people. Destroy social America. That, in a nutshell, sums it up. Destroy social America, the social contract this country has had with U.S. citizens, at least since the New Deal. Social Security, Medicare under Lyndon Johnson, Medicaid, public pensions, food stamps, all the other elements of social America, and they want to abolish them incrementally over a number of years, maybe the next decade. Do it slowly so people only feel a little pain at a time, and convince them with relentless propaganda that we're doing this for your own good. In other words, we're bashing in your skull to make you feel better. That's how much sense it makes.
At home, I mean, I think that's the really key to the whole change that's taken place is, excuse me, Steve, is the attack on the American people themselves, which started with 1980. Up until 1980, we had a system where the American empire was doing all the things we know it has done, which have been pretty, you know, the death squad, dictatorships across the world and so on, from Indonesia to Latin America. But they didn't, the people in America in general had life better than other people's, with unions, and in particular having a very significant place inside the wage determination and the social benefits and so forth, which they led at the federal level as well. And we had the possibility of people going on strike against, oppressive working conditions that immiserated them. And you had to, in which the capitalist class itself realized that you had to pay your workers well if you were going to sell your product. You had to ensure an aggregate demand for the products that you were producing in order to ensure their sale and your profits. So that was the great, as you say, the covenant or the understanding that what is good for capital and for profit must also have some be good for the people to at least generate enough aggregate demand for your products. This and the whole Keynesian understanding of economics was tied up in this about you have to have the demand, and he was saying, well, you require government investment for that demand. Well, both of the government investment for that demand and the social programs that go with that at best, and the higher wages and benefits in order to ensure the aggregate demand from the people themselves as individual purchasers and consumers, both of those went out the window, and this was all, you know, very much planned. This was the supranational sovereignty that Rockefeller was so pleased that the press had paid no attention, you know, didn't subject it to the glare of publicity during those years while the plan was being formed through the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberg group and so forth, that the plan was that, well, if you have transnational money sequence trade, where the only rights of these transnational treaties, which nations are forced to obey and never go through a legislative examination, that has gone across the world, so they don't need to worry about whether the American workers or anybody domestic has any money to purchase goods, because they can sell them abroad, and they don't need to worry about having social plans or social sectors, or in order to keep the working class happy. Otherwise, they might rebel because they don't need the workers anymore. And meanwhile, you build up your armed forces to crush all resistance to this program, which is now moving since 9/11 particular. All limits were taken off, even the old limits of the constitutional protections of citizens by habeas corpus and due process and so forth. No limits on how far you can go the oppression. And for the rest of the world, there's no limits there either, because 9/11 gave a justification for attacking anybody as a terrorist, which is an old game. I mean, that goes to Israel. I always talked about terrorists. By the way, I would just want to bring in the Nazi thing. That was the crucial thing the Nazis used. They always said terrorists. That was the Reichstag fire. That was anybody who resisted them was a terrorist. The program is really so similar as to be, well, in fact, it was transmitted. And so we have a situation now where anything goes. There's nothing left for the people. They're going to take everything. And then they're going to scream and yell about the terrorists outside, divert all attention. These wars aren't just in order to take other people's resources and take over their governments and reduce them to subordination and subjugation. They are to divert attention from what's going on the home ground, which is essentially, as the Wall Street occupation made clear, and that was a good occurrence, at least at the ideological level, that this is all basically to take everything from the 99% to give to the far less than 1% who are actually benefiting from this program. And you divert attention from that onto the terrorists abroad, or maybe they're at home. We got to worry about the terrorists here. And you don't have to worry about the working class. You don't have to worry about social programs. You don't have to worry about anything. And then, of course, the inequality multiplies there. The revenues of the rich go over, beyond anything that's ever been experienced before in the human condition in history. And they did still not a nothing, not even 2% on all that that we've taken. But the underlying problem is that if you could do this everywhere, and they're doing it everywhere, they've done it now in Europe as well, and they're doing it mainly through, as you know, through the financial and the money sequence system and the private bank system, is at the source and the marrow of the whole thing. If you keep doing that to people, you can't just sell your goods abroad either, because they too don't have anything to buy anything with. The key, the sort of inner logic of the whole thing, which is most diabolical for me, is that it's structured against life and livelihoods and life bases. Even if it is not consciously so, though the consciousness of, willful blindness is a form of consciousness, is that actually there is no limit. They will destroy everything. They will take all life. They will destroy, pollute, exhaust, deplete, rip everything. There's nothing. This is the most disturbing thing to me, Steve, as a value theorist, as well as a human observer, and somebody who's very much, as I think more and more people do, that's the good news, is that more and more people identify with the life world around them, identify with people's lives across oceans, which, in my parents' day, nobody really much did, unless they were very exceptional. Now that's a very widespread thing, and I think that's what they're fighting against. This system, and it's a criminal system that has been instituted, and then you have the moving parts of that criminal system that has been instituted. It will do anything. It is now set. Its set point is to destroy all means of life on Earth. It doesn't, I mean, it'll stick to death squads and so forth for the individuals, but the more sinister thing is that it's undermining, destroying, polluting, depredating all means of life and life bases on Earth at the individual level and at the ecological planetary level. And it just, there is no limit to it. And what we're seeing is just one thing after another spelling out this meta program. And of course what I do, you know, we each do our different functions and vocations of how to deal with this. My function, I find, is being a logician and a moral philosopher and so forth, is to take this inner value program apart at its source, because it's never discussed. It's not even discussed by moral philosophy. And once it's pointed out to people, once they see it, then they can understand that actually you have the most criminal system in the history of mankind that has now globalized more in its criminality, and by criminality one means or evil. We might use a more an old-fashioned term, evil, and the evil is to the, you know, in proportion to the life it systematically disables and destroys. That's what evil is, and this is evil all the way down. But it's structured to be evil. Its very concept of rationality is, which is just self-maximization without concern for anything else but the assets of the self-maximizer, which has been instituted through corporations and now instituted, of course, through the state, which operates as the terror, the real terror network of the world, to ensure this happens. And it's as if, you know, I've had a long image as if everybody is in a way somehow in a post-hypnotic trance. And of course they are, really, with the media going on 5 hours a day and people spending more time when they're kids than they do at school watching the media, which are pretty well, with the exceptions we know in terms of numbers, are just vast, saturating propaganda fields that people are reduced to accepting, not only accepting all this, but seeking, aspiring in terms of succeeding at getting your position up in this situation that's killing everybody else off. And that's why competition is emphasized so much. You must compete to survive, so that even workers will say, as their wages are being chopped and so forth, they've been so conditioned, and I've seen this actually in documentaries, well, they're saying, well, we've got to be competitive. Well, we've got to be competitive. And so what the problem is that ultimately the problem is the mindset or the ruling group mind, or it's right at the level of the framework of understanding and perception itself that has reversed all of reality into its opposite, and what that reality is and what's determining it down to the smallest t now across the Middle East and Central Asia and going east. But unfortunately, China, what's China offering as an alternative? China has thrown its people off the bus even more. They have 200 million people that formerly had worked groups that they were almost like their families, and they had secure jobs and access to clinical medicine and guaranteed, and of course that was called the Iron Rice Bowl, anything that ensures people's livelihoods, their lives, and they worked hard and they did well. Anyway, they were all just basically cut off right at the local level. And so they've charged ahead with this same program themselves, and you know, the Chinese are now, they have many more billionaires inside their ruling groups now than the Americans. It's much more money, of course, a much bigger society. So you really worry about where is there any alternative left except in the hearts and minds and souls of people like us and the people that which I actually find all around me. So that's why I go back to the image of a post-hypnotic trance. All the people that I engage with virtually, and I, you know, on a regular, everyday basis, you know, I live in a small city, they understand what's going on. They're not surprised in a way by to have it laid bare. They don't disagree with it. But we have this, and that's where it brings it around to the media, as well as, I guess, just people's habits inside their workplaces, which of course are all subjugated to this very program, is that you actually have a disconnect between people's minds and reality that has been so instituted you wonder what the way out is. And that's where I go to Latin America. Thank God Latin America has happened, and places like Norway and Scandinavia in general, where they understand, and they're the only successful economies. So I think I've gone on a long while here, but the thing that's concerned me about the Occupy Wall Street and the whole left positioning inside, or, you know, the system opposition that's occurring inside the United States against what is basically a destroying of their lives, is that it has no policy formation, and that was and willingness to go into the streets, which is what Latin America had. They had very clean, clear policies that they were going to do, which are the very things you've mentioned. You know, you've got to increase your taxes to fair levels. That'll bring even more than your resources, but you've got to reclaim your resources. And you've got to have a program to do this, and you've got to lift up the piece, you know, just in terms of having an economy. You have to ensure that the life capital of the people is developed so that they're going to be more productive. The way you're going to do that is by solving the problem of poverty. They've more than halved it in under 10 years, and all of that is built into their policy. So we come, you know, you go through this incredibly discouraging circle that we go through in the Middle East and everywhere and all around us. My country is lost. My country is lost. Canada has had its country taken away. And I'm old enough to realize that that's pretty significant since the Second World War, before the Second World War. It's now in the hands of a Bush type of moron who is just absolutely, you know, market worship. And it isn't even a market, really. It's the money sequence, transnational money sequence worship, of which he's a mere servant. So
you're talking about Stephen Harper, for listeners who don't know much about Canadian government. Yeah, he's the alter ego of a George Bush or a Barack Obama. In other words, the worst of the worst.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
I made a comment, John, about Stephen Harper and what a hardliner he is, and how unfortunate it is that Canada has anybody like him as their prime minister. And he's a replica. He's a clone of George Bush.
Yeah. But, you know, it's done the same way. It's always the same. It's the transnational money sequences taking over, as they have since, you know, they supplied Hitler. You know, that we've talked about it perhaps in the past, that all, you know, they financed Hitler. You know, George Bush's own grandfather was very much involved in the financing of Hitler. And Harriman was involved, and then of course all the major corporations produced for the Nazis, even after war was declared on the Nazis by the U.S. government, because then you see you had a decent, you had a government that actually stood. You had Roosevelt then, you see, and then you had his vice president, who should have been president, Henry Wallace, and you even had a guy called Eccles, who was the head of the Federal Reserve. All of those people knew you had to reduce inequality, that you had to conquer fascism at home. All of them said this, and that, you know, the New Deal was part of the program of doing this, but it wasn't the end of it. So that something very pathological has happened to the U.S. since that time. It basically converted into Nazism, but a Nazism of a different sort, where the money party, it's not nothing to do with anti-Semitism, you know, Semites, if you think of just the Jewish Semites as opposed to the Arab Semites, are going to rise to the top of the money sequence system, as they do in many domains. And so it's no longer that racial bullshit or that horrible ethnocidal program. It's just a transnational money sequencing without limit to override every life requirement that exists on the face of the earth, and to do it by either direct destruction or by the death squads or by programs, as in Canada. What they did in Canada is that the oil, the transnational money sequence, the most powerful are the banks and the oil corporations, and the oil took over basically over years and years, and they did the same kind of planning over years. They brought this particular individual through as basically their boy. He was born in the outskirts of Toronto, in a suburb of Toronto, but he pretends to be a Calgary oil man out of the West. And they had a right-wing group called Citizens Coalition of all things that wanted to destroy social programs as its major thing and reduce taxes. This is way before Bush. This started in the 60s. And they just slowly developed this system, and then they financed a new party into existence called the Reform Party. We used to call it the Deform Party, and it was fascists, bigots, and greedheads was one of the phrases that was used for them. Well, that Reform Party, used the same. It was actually way before Bush, in fact. These things were happening simultaneously in both countries, understandably. And so the Reform Party then swallowed the Progressive Conservative Party, which used to be our so-called right-wing party, but it was Progressive Conservative. It's no longer, and it brought in a lot of our social programs, but it's no longer the Progressive Conservative Party. It's just the Conservative Party, which itself is an Orwellian term because they're not for conserving anything, least of all people's lives and citizens' life security. They're into basically turning everything into their greater profits on a worldwide basis. And so we have an oil prime minister now. He is just, you might as well have put in a clone of one of them, or better, because he's, he has a PhD in economics. He's not stupid. He's very cunning, actually. And I call him a moron in the sense of a social moron. He's a psychopath, really, in the sense of has absolutely no concern about other people's and their life requirements. And he has stripped everything in Canada just overnight. He got in with less than 50% of the vote, because you can in our three-party system do that. He got in with less than 50% of the vote, and probably only on less than, this bigot group, less than 30% of the population across our border seems to control politics, that you can always count on them to vote for right-wing trash, what Hannah Arendt called the atomized masses, the negative solidarity of the atomized masses. And you can always count on them, and then, of course, they flood and do it illegally, just as in the U.S., flood the election airwaves with oil money-backed and corporate money-backed ads, attack ads, and they got this guy in. And this guy has just slashed everything. There's nothing he is not going to destroy of Canada's social infrastructure. And, of course, one of these will be environmental regulations. The biggest thing he did was bring in environmental to destroy all environmental regulations in the country. Not just the regulations, but the audits, any facts that tell you what's going on, any scientific laboratory setup, any monitoring of ecocidal trends from climate to acidification of lakes, all of that he just destroyed inside the budget, and it was called an omnibus budget. He just wiped out all the coordinates of ecological attention that a people in a government give to what's going on. Of course, withdrew from Kyoto and abandoned any environmental regulations, and of course, moving all the time against unions as hard as he can, basically busting unions same way as in the north, and doing it all inside, especially the environmental, ecocidal environmental attack, all inside the budget itself, which just came down a few months ago. And it's like the way the Nazis attacked. They did this overwhelming blitzkrieg, where people were just confused. And this is all part of the plan, but it's part of 9/11. People are confused, bewildered, don't know what to do, and then you just slip this thing in, and it just goes on this programmatic thing. And that's where the oil lines that are crossing our borders come in, those oil pipes. They're trying to put the oil pipes through everywhere, none of it to be processed inside of Canada. All to be put through dirty oil, and that's, what Obama briefly stopped, the Keystone Pipeline, and there's also one going across our beautiful mountains, which is the most beautiful area of the world, into the West Coast. They're trying to do it through there. And you know how he's going to do that? I mean, the China bashing and everything which he used to do doesn't matter. What matters is the transnational money sequencing to more with no limit. He's making a treaty with China so they can override Canadian laws and environmental laws under WTO regulations and jam it through the mountains.
I'm going to interrupt. We are at the top of the hour almost, and we are running out of time. I must tell you that your sound on the second half of the program was infinitely better than the first half. You were very choppy in the first half of the program.
We got meddled with, Steve. They cut me off for the second part. I had to call back in. I couldn't call back in early. Something funny was going on here, Steve.
Well, whatever funny was going on, we cleared it all up, John, and you came in clear as a bell for the last half of the program. I'm very grateful for that. I look forward to getting you back next month. I hope one year we can have an approaching holiday season, John, where there really will be something to give joy about. It seems each one that I've noticed in recent years, there's been less joy. There practically is none at all. But I urge listeners to tune in again next week. Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.